Investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.
That's funny. That sounds like the extro to me. Well, actually, it's an intro. This is World Watchers International with Mae Brussel from KLRB, Carmel, California. Come in, Mae.
Oh, here I am. Hello.
This is Mae at KLRB. It's broadcast number 536, and it's March the 14th, 1982. January the 13th, that seems like a long time ago this year, 1982, Air Florida Flight 90 went down in Washington, D.C., out of National Airport into the water. The Potomac hit the bridge. And usually, by the time I've done a three-part series on a particular event, except for a little bit of updating, the information is pretty much available to study it on your own. But there are new pieces of information coming out about that air crash and about other air crashes of the monopoly, or the intended monopoly of the airlines. And I'm going to just quickly run through some of the updates of the air stories that are coming out in the news each week. They're just amazing. In essence, it seems that three or four of the major airlines are trying to squeeze out all small airlines by only having into their computerized information about those particular major airlines, and they're competing with each other. Some of them are trying to swallow up the smaller ones. Now, this isn't like a business industry where you're selling blue jeans or chocolate candies, or you're competing with sports events where you're making trips to visit other people or business on airplanes. Your life is in danger. You're up there in the sky. And when you compete in other fields, whether the organized crime or the CIA or the mafia links or even big business or a combination of all of them get involved, it can affect how things turn out, whether it's boxing or baseball or basketball events. And also, when the mob comes into dry cleaning plants or liquor industries or entertainment, you have a certain amount of choice whether you want to stay away from it or how it's going to grab you or affect your life. So when it gets into the airlines and you're up there in the friendly skies, and now the friendly skies are involved in a major series of scandals, it is very dangerous, and it will get worse if there are these air wars. And if they're trying to hurt each other and down airplanes, it will get much worse. And this has to stop. And the only way to stop it is to investigate any single crash completely that looks suspicious. Just as I've said for years, the only way to stop the chain of political assassinations and political leaders and lawyers and judges and so forth is to go back to any single one assassination and do it thoroughly and expose it, and you'll find the same people involved and all the others that followed. If you want to find out who killed John Belushi, and I'll do a little bit on that in a minute, you can go to any one of 40 rock musicians and trace who they were with, what they did last, who gave them the food, why they were killed, what they were saying, and you would solve all of the murders of the musicians. When you get your mind to finding the answers to these things, the answers are there. But the airline, in the meanwhile, is a treacherous operation. And I do want to go into just a few top stories to update on the airlines that were in the news this week. One has to do with Air Florida, Flight 90. This came out of the Houston Post. De-icing readings appeared proper, the pair say. This has to do with the fact that when they read the readings for the de-icing, the service container said 12 to 13% glycol content to take the ice off, even though the nozzle reading for the pilots was 25%. They were told one thing and they got another. And the question I wonder is, did Air Florida get a special kind of de-icing that other airplanes didn't get? I don't know the mechanics of it, but the article said that they were getting a reading that was different than what they were actually getting. Another investigation of data on the runways is going on of other airplanes, as I mentioned, I believe, last week, that were arriving, leaving around Air Florida. Another important article out of the Washington Post, March the 7th, 1982, federal rules do not require airports, their firefighters, to respond to crashes off their property or in the Potomac. Remember, 6 months before Air Florida crashed, actually in July, they had a training a few miles below in the river in the Potomac. Now they say that there's no protection of firefighters. They don't have to go if a plane is in the Potomac. Now, the National Airport is right on the edge there, and it is an airport used most frequently by members of the Congress and military people going in and out of Washington. They just don't have to look in the river. If you fall in, I guess it's too bad. The Washington Post article also said that there was an engine whine in the cockpit voice recorder tape, speculation that the pilot initially threw the throttles correctly and then pulled it back in for a false reading, and there was a question about that. Then there was another article in the newspaper this week, several articles about a airplane. The Houston Post had an article March the 5th, an airplane that left Andrews Air Force Base, went to the National Airport in Washington, D.C., then to Dallas-Fort Worth, and then on to Wichita Falls, and an airman at Andrews Air Force Base, Airman First Class Martin Thomas Bradley, put his wife on this airplane and had an explosive bomb with a timer, and it was indeed a bomb. It was supposed to blow up, and when she got through two airports where she had this bomb with her that she was carrying through, she got through the security at Braniff Airport at National Airlines, and she got through the security at Dallas-Fort Worth, and a member of the Congress, Representative Jay Pickle of Texas, said he wants to know how they got through, that he was on that Braniff flight the night before, and how did she get through two searches and so forth with this bomb on that plane. And, of course, I felt for a long time that certain people were allowed to get through for specific purposes, but the Braniff airplane was the one that was supposed to blow up. Now, there was another long article in the San Jose Mercury this week. CAB probes dirty tricks in the friendly skies. Did American Airlines create a cash flow crisis for Braniff Airlines? And the gist of this San Jose Mercury article from March the 11th is that American Airlines is competing with Braniff. And in the newspaper, across the top, it said, did American Airlines hurt Braniff? Now, this is one of the dirtiest stories I've heard in a long time, because Braniff was the plane that was supposed to have the bomb. And again, this goes back to American Airlines that was responsible for de-icing also Air Florida when it took off. The article says American Airlines used a secret corporate strategy or dirty tricks to force Braniff International into bankruptcy. And it was only a quick turn that they got out of bankruptcy. They were using computers. And this is what I understand. And there's another article that I was told about that we'll share next week on the computerized method of the major airlines locking out the smaller airlines. This article says the key issue is, did they deliberately, or could it be accidentally, create a Braniff cash flow crisis last week? They kept $9 million worth of Braniff tickets in their revenue accounting department and suddenly dumped them on the industry clearinghouse for processing, which is Chase Manhattan Bank in New York, of course. The American airline situation triggered a critical Braniff cash flow. To meet the loss of $8 million, they were forced to slash full paychecks of employees, and it triggered an avalanche of cancellations that went to American Airlines. American would be the biggest victor if Braniff collapsed. It's their arch rival. Then the San Jose Mercury goes on to say that American executives secretly approached Braniff creditors and urged them to pull the plug out on Braniff for fear their discounts could cause serious financial damage to American Airlines. Now, these, what I'm reading, are some allegations against American Airlines, the friendly skies, that were in the San Jose Mercury. They said American recently had a beat Braniff sales meeting in which nasty sales tactics were discussed with the aim of putting them out of business. Remember that when Air Florida wanted to buy Western Airlines in June, then there was a quick meeting in October when Neil Burke came down from Alaska and said, I'll take care of Western Airlines, and this competition over airlines is almost identical. This article says American representatives called Braniff saying there were technical problems with their jets and they would have to put 100 passengers from American Airlines to Braniff, but at the last minute they said the problems were solved and Braniff was stuck with 100 meals that they had ordered, and then they had to double that three or four times because they did it on flights from Honolulu to Dallas flights. And this reminded me of the Watergate tricks of Richard Nixon and his dirty crowd. And that was Richard Kalmbach, the attorney for United Airlines, and their gang. And remember, once there was a dinner party for Shirley Chisholm, the member of Congress, and they ordered hundreds of chickens, fried chickens, and she hadn't ordered them. And they'd order hundreds of meals for people that weren't used. And then their other political opponents or people running for office would have to pay for them. This looks like a continuation. American Airlines, it's alleged, is doing this. And United Airlines and Mr. Herbert Kalmbach and Tricky Dick and Donald Segretti were doing that and much more. The American airline, according to this allegation in San Jose Mercury, the American pilots on taxiways engaged in runway tactics that delayed Braniff flights, causing the Federal Aviation Administration to call a meeting of air carriers. Now, isn't it the story that Air Florida crashed because of a delay of so many minutes on the runway there? And American Airlines is responsible for the defrosting and taking care of Air Florida at the national airport. This article is a scandal about an investigation going into American Airlines. And then, as I say, there was this article about the time bomb and a member of the Congress from Texas asking how at National Airport, a airplane, the Braniff takes off with a bomb on it. Now, the man who did this is at Andrews Air Force Base, and he's in the Army there. That's the Air Force Base where Ronald Reagan goes in and out almost every weekend and during the week. And this fellow that put the bomb on the plane put it in his wife's suitcase. She also is in the military, and she was being reassigned somewhere else to a Texas base. So he put this bomb on the plane, got through both of the detectors. Now, I believe that most of these major hijackings are done by people being allowed to get through with these submachine guns and guns, and I've mentioned it before. But they are probing the American Airlines, and I think it's disgusting. The friendly skies, even the allegations or suggestions of such hanky-panky. And then the article from the Knight Ritter Service, San Jose Mercury, Air Florida says American crew shared the duty to de-ice Flight 90. American Airlines services Air Florida out of National Airport in Washington, D.C. They were responsible for making sure that the Boeing 737 was in proper condition before leaving the gate. And another article, the Los Angeles Times, March the 11th, American Airlines sees substantial loss in the quarter. Remember, Air Florida was doing fine, wasn't losing money. For 10 years, it was ahead. The head of Air Florida went to work for Pan Am. Pan Am is losing millions. American Airlines is losing millions. And this LA Times has a mention of how much they lost in 1981. So, and the competition before Braniff. But whatever they're losing or however they're competing with deductions, when they start putting bombs on planes or directing them or controlling those pilots in some way, and the fatalities in Washington was 78, the Braniff didn't go off, but it could have. Would this guy, this Army person, have been detected? Remember I said an Air Force pilot was one of the two pilots on the Air Florida that went down. It was an Air Sergeant, a man from Andrews Air Force Base, that put the bomb on the plane. Another article, Midway Airlines chief is on leave of absence. It's a small airline, and he's decided to take a short leave, unlike other new airlines such as New York Air and People's Express, that had to cut back their fares. He's doing well so far, but according to the Wall Street Journal and the San Francisco Examiner, March the 9th, Irving T. Tague, founder and chairman of Midway Airlines, is taking his leave March the 1st. MGM Grand Hotel names Alvin Benedict to succeed Benninger. I've been talking about Fred Benninger and his role in coming in on the board of Western Airlines just at a time that Air Florida wanted to take it over, and Neil Berg stepped in. Fred Benninger, this past week, is resigning from MGM Hotels, and he's going to still work with them, but he's getting out of the hotel. He's been there since 1971 when he came directly from Flying Tigers from the CIA and the Southeast Asia operation, where he was there for 20 years. Another MGM Grand agrees to pay $15 million to settle 200 claims. This is the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas, 85 killed, 700 injured. Is this MGM Grand or the Hilton competition? Are there hotel arsonists? Because obviously one guy lying back in bed lighting one joint didn't set simultaneous fires in Las Vegas that he was charged with. But there were 85 killed there and 700 injured. And the figures really add up. You think 78 in the Potomac and so forth. Are these arson wars or mob wars trying to hurt the other person or settle them back? And how many people will be in hotels, resort hotels, large hotels, or airplanes that go down? Another article from the Wall Street Journal this week, Continental Air names MGM chief to its board. Now, the Continental Airline has been combining and having troubles. Continental is 51% owned by Texas International Airlines, and we've gone into the Continental conflicts. Now, the president of MGM is going over to the Continental. The point being, I'm sure most of you who hear this program sometimes for the first, second, third, or fifth time, we'll get the details of these. We've done other parts on it, but you'll get the gist that there's quite a bit of activity in the friendly skies up there. And finally, the Pan Am nominates a unionist board. They have a new member to their board, Robert L. Gould, who flew fighter planes and helicopters for the Marines, joined Pan Am in 1965, and he's currently chairman of the Airline Pilots Association. He's joined Pan Am. And then one other thing, Golden West Airline is asking for a cut in salaries. They're asking the pilots and the stewardesses across the board, of course, to take cuts in salaries. It seems Golden West is going under also and can't pay their employees this week, and they need a cut in salaries. A tragic condition, and as I say, it rubs off to all of us when these things go on. I was reading this week that book, The Last Mafioso, by Ovid Damaris, and he's telling about Fratriano, the mob king, and in that book he also mentions Kirk Kerkorian from MGM Grand Hotel on page 445. I mentioned that before on another program, that when Kirk wants MGM studio, he simply goes over to a foreign bank, picks it up, and in this book it says it could be laundered mob loop, question mark, tax haven money, question mark, and of course I say, is it some of the Nazi money floating around to take over the major corporations and studios? We don't know yet. They are combined, of course. And this book, The Last Mafioso, mentions Kirk Kerkorian in there and the Vegas operations. Now, I do want to do a few articles or just bring out the John Belushi story, the murder. I believe he was murdered. And if you want more on the killing of the rock musicians, I did a five-part series on the murder of John Lennon. And on one of those programs, the sheet that goes with it, I have a list of 30 or 4 rock musicians that I believe were murdered or attempted murders up till the time that John Lennon was killed. Of course, we have a lot more to update since then. Believe it or not, there are a lot more since I got that out. Now, the first story of John Belushi, he died Friday, March the 5th. And on March the 6th, the newspaper said, actor dies at age 33. He apparently choked on food. The lieutenant cook from the LAPD went there. It appears to be natural causes. The policeman said, we see nothing here that seems suspicious. There's no sign of drug usage. They mentioned the young woman who was at the bungalow, who was taken away with handcuffs in question. Bruce Beckler, the hotel gardener, said, Belushi was just a heavy man and his heart evidently failed him. There's no evidence of anything else. Now, that's 24 hours later, the first morning paper, and the gardener all of a sudden is the expert of medicine. This is the way these things work in Hollywood. And the article goes on to tell of his Blues Brothers with Dan Aykroyd and his white soul, the white man with a soul singer inside of them, and their impersonation, his impersonations of Henry Kissinger. The LA Times the same day said the police found nothing out of the ordinary. He was in bed. His clothes were neatly folded and put away as though he had gone to bed for the night. This reminds me of the Goebbels family, where they're in the bunker and Mr. and Mrs. Goebbels give the 5 beautiful little children some cyanide that they break and put in their mouth, and they have a nice long sleep. Well, Belushi was just lying, stretched out, just sleeping, swallowed his tongue. They tried to do resuscitation. He'd choked on his tongue. There was phlegm in his mouth, probably bubbling from the cyanide. The woman said that she woke him up to give him some food. At 8 o'clock, a room service came for breakfast, and someone other than the actor signed it. They left it very mysteriously, someone other. The woman woke him up. She said she gave him a glass of water, and he went right back to sleep, and she assumed everything was okay, and she came back later. That's the first day. Another article, Belushi drifted from one college to the other to avoid being in the Vietnam War. He dabbled in politics. He was part of the street demonstrations in 1968 in Chicago, the Democratic National Convention. The same day, 24 hours later, Sans Day Mercury, the police found no sign of a struggle, nothing out of the ordinary, no reason to suspect foul play. Another big article, no foul play in Belushi death. Belushi predicted a young death. Now, in these cases, within 24 hours, the victim becomes someone who already knew he was going to die, the cause of his death. He knows that. He was in good health the night before at 2 in the morning. He's dead by noon, and he's already been dead 3 hours. But he was at a club, Roxy's, on the Sunset Strip. They had trouble getting him to take any wine. He had no drugs and so forth. And the L.A. coroner, Thomas Noguchi, appeared. He was criticized for comments after the death of William Holden and Natalie Wood, and he wouldn't say anything at that time. The second day, this is by Sunday, or Saturday rather, those were the first Friday stories. The headline says, Belushi's autopsy fails to yield the cause of death. The cause of death still not known, says the coroner. Then another long article, San Francisco Examiner, Belushi lived his life in his own peculiar way. He was rowdy even by the Hollywood standards. So in his own peculiar way, like Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, and these people, they all die young. They went on, his life was like Bluto. He was messy, and they imply that he was uncouth and kind of crude and led a kind of, not very clean, rumpled clothes and so forth, although he died with everything tucked in the drawer and just very nice and clean. And then by Monday, he's already now dead since Friday, headlines, Belushi's death cause still undetermined. More detailed tests must be conducted. The initial autopsy didn't reveal the cause of death. Further tests need to find the cause of his death. Then Philip Schwartzberg, the assistant of the coroner in Los Angeles, had a press conference. Maybe it was a heart condition. He appeared to have some condition. They would take the tissues from the body because they didn't know what he died from. Then there's an interview with Howard Koch, producer of the Academy Awards, March 29th coming up. And Belushi and McElroy were supposed to give an award for the best visual effects. Mr. Koch said he sounded just fine. He talked to him just shortly before he died. And San Francisco Examiner, this is 4 days later, experts think Belushi didn't choke. They're pretty sure, the coroner said, that choking could be ruled out, but it could be a heart attack. That couldn't be ruled out unless we do more tests. Then one of the pathologists who conducted the 1968 autopsy of Robert Kennedy, and that should be a dead giveaway right there, told a reporter, at the first autopsy, you cut it open and you look at the internal organs, you don't find anything. You wind up a heart attack occurred. The evidence isn't visible, but we'll have to look for some heart condition or something. They opened him up. And then the problem is solved. Miracle of miracles. The TV station, ABC TV, Belushi died of overdose of drugs, heroin and cocaine and powder sprinkled all over the night table and needles in his arms. And all of a sudden they come up with this cockamania story. A TV station, KABC, announces this. Coroner Noguchi still refused to comment, but he also was asked to resign, and he refused to resign from the L.A. coroner's office. TV station says drugs helped kill Belushi. KABC-TV. I mentioned a few weeks ago in terms of MGM and Mr. Rothman taking over MGM that operation, that Rothman came from the law office of Greg Bouncer. Greg Bouncer was the attorney for Howard Hughes. He's the attorney for American Broadcasting, the CIA, and the Vegas drug syndicate, if you want to call it that. And KABC, the point being, is not so clean. Many of these characters that whose names are in the news are involved with that. Billy Vesco, Bobby Hall, Jack Eggers in the Beverly Hills Police Department, the drugging of Howard Hughes, and the scandal of the Hollywood rock stars. In fact, Bobby Hall had 4 or 5 managers of rock stars come to him and say, who is drugging my artist? And tantamount, who's to kill them? And then Bobby Hall was shot in the mouth, and he was killed also. And he was trying to investigate who was drugging the rock musicians and getting them in this condition. And he had tape recordings of this operation. And Hollywood is full of giving bad drugs. Hollywood's full of drugs, but it's also full of giving bad drugs to specific people who are anti-establishment at the time and doing their thing. So KABC had the story. More reports say cocaine caused Belushi's death. Then you saw a lot of that because now it was solved, right? Overdose of heroin, cocaine killed Belushi, the coroner says. L.A. coroner Noguchi, as I say, has been suspended for 30 days. Belushi's death ruled overdose of 2 drugs. And details now, coke, heroin, as I say, powder on the table, needle holes. They couldn't find the needle holes for 5 days, okay? Now they find it. Signs of drug use on Belushi's body reported. There's no question about it. The marks on his arms were made by needles. The report was backed up by other individuals. Why did it take so long? March the 11th, they come out with all these needles. I mean, somebody could poke him like a pincushion when he was in that coroner's office, and that's very possible. Then the doctor for Belushi speaks up and says there's a mystery here. Belushi's doctor doubts the cocaine reports. He never saw needle marks on Belushi's arm, and he's not convinced that the death was drug-related. And then the widow steps in for a while. Once in a while, a widow comes in. It isn't very often. Belushi's wife says something weird happened. He wasn't a junkie. I want to know more about this Evelyn Smith who was with him. She was at the place where Belushi stayed. She was kicked out of Chateau Marmont two nights before by the bodyguard. 2 days before he died, John told Bill to throw her out of the room, and somehow she showed up, and she got in, and I want to know more. And she's asking, who is this person who was taken off in handcuffs and so forth? She's a junkie around, or I won't use the word junkie, she's a woman around other musicians. The 34-year-old Smith once had a relationship with singer Gordon Lightfoot in Toronto. Big deal. And according to the Chicago paper, she was a woman in the drug milieu when she moved into Hollywood in 1978. Yeah, but so was the CIA, and the drug milieu did a lot of damage to a lot of musicians, tempting them, overdosing them, injecting them, and so forth. There's no more information about this woman, where she came, why she was kicked out, what he had, why she ordered breakfast, if he couldn't eat it, why she left, where she went in between. And Mrs. Belushi is saying that she wants to know more about this woman. Lots of luck. I think we could find out, but it's very hard to do it. In the meanwhile, Mr. Noguchi has been, Coroner Noguchi, has been suspended for 30 days. He's the attorney. He was represented by Godfrey Isaacs in Los Angeles to stop his being fired as the chief coroner. Godfrey Isaacs was the attorney for Sirhan Sirhan, one of two or three attorneys for Sirhan. And he also represents the coroner in Los Angeles. See what a cozy, incestuous thing going on they have down there. Now, there were some charges about Noguchi in the paper, and I have a lot more to do with you later, but a few of them, they said he used his office and county resources and facilities for outside consulting work, probably right to the CIA in Washington. He has a telephone in his office for use in non-county business. His private consulting work interferes with the performance and responsibilities he has to do. The physical evidence needs of Los Angeles County are not being met. There's serious problems. There's no standard procedure for collecting, labeling, and documenting evidence. Bodies are often stacked before the evidence is taken, resulting in practices not conducive to collection and retention of uncontaminated evidence. I might say that when he had Robert Kennedy in the coroner's office, he cut off the right sleeve of Robert Kennedy's coat and shirt. That's gone. You couldn't tell there were bullet entry holes from behind, and there were by Thane Caesar. The one thing Noguchi did say, that the powder burn was 1 inch from the back of the head, and that was the security guard from Lockheed that was behind Robert Kennedy that did shoot that gun that night, got off a couple of bullets. He's now an organizer for the Nazi Party in, I understand, this is what I was told, out in Riverside, California. This article, the LA Times, says the coroner violated state health and safety codes by burying autopsy specimens in a public dump. Now, what does he take? He takes somebody's organs out or something that they're not supposed to see. There's a certain poison, maybe puts it in a public dump and then brings in somebody else's stomach or heart from another body. What in the heck is he dumping autopsy specimens out in a public dump? And should they be labeled? The officer's medical staff is overworked and understaffed. The drug analysis lab is destined to collapse. They can't do proper reports. And incidentally, that Ron Settle's body, I might have mentioned the sport basketball figure who was in the L.A. jail down at the Signal Hill police station. They're exhuming that body and sending it to Dr. Bond in New York City. That's the CIA doctor in New York City that did that marvelous autopsy by telephone on Nelson Rockefeller. Well, so much for the Los Angeles, the John Belushi situation. I feel sorry for any artist who's there, who wants to survive, who is controversial, who's different, or if they want to be wiped out. The city is so corrupt, as are most American cities, that these autopsies are just ridiculous, and just as the investigations on these airplanes and getting to who is dying is getting more difficult. It's easy to find the pieces and to ask the right questions because they're so flagrant and sloppy these days, they can't even cover up their act. Or maybe years ago, people weren't even trying to ask the questions. I'm going to take a break in 1 minute and get back to some other matters. I just briefly want to say I'll get to the ad agency, J. Walter Thompson, soon. They have $24.5 million on the books. That's the ad agency that was from Mullen Associates, the Watergate fame, the Robert Haldeman, John Segretti, a who's who of people at the time of Watergate linked with the CIA, the dirty tricks, the same agency that sells you Disneyland and Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. They sell us Mickey Mouse, our presidents from California. That's J. Walter Thompson. They're caught with a little operation, $24.5 million that could have been siphoned to espionage work. We'll do more on that next week and take a one-minute break.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.